Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better with new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect. The fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Realpolitik. I am your host, Firas Wadad. And today we're going to be talking a little bit about the resumed war in the Middle East. Does it actually escalate more? Does it subside and Trump succeeds in reimposing the ceasefire? What are the prospects for a deal? And what kicked this whole thing off to begin with? Let's start a little bit with the last question and the incentives of the two sides, especially Iran and Hezbollah and Israel, actually, to escalate the conflict again. So the first bit, if you look at the map here, is that the Israelis are trying to establish a new buffer zone in Lebanon. They've announced this yellow line all over southern Lebanon that is intended to become a buffer zone between them and Hezbollah. Here it reaches the Litani River, which runs along the border between the dark red area and the light red area. And the idea in an ideal world for the Israelis might be to connect to the Christian town of Jezzine here, and then that means that they can fully intervene in Lebanon's politics. And that would be a restoration to the line of control that existed in Lebanon before 2000, when the Israelis occupied a pretty big chunk of South Lebanon with the aim of just keeping Hezbollah away from the border. Remember, Hezbollah was created because Israel invaded. It's a long story, but let's not get into that. And so the Israelis are occupying bits and pieces of territory along the border. They're trying to stay away from some of the Christian villages like Ramesh here. But the idea is to clear Hezbollah out. And Hezbollah has been receiving a pretty bad beating, all things considered. It's been fighting back and inflicting some casualties, and it's decided to sacrifice some territory in the belief that over a long enough time period, it will turn this into a war of attrition and will therefore be able to beat the Israelis and force them back. But in the meantime, the Israelis are actually escalating quite badly, and they were trying to implement the Dahi Doctrine. Now, the Dahi Doctrine, for those of you who don't know, this is a Israeli military strategy that was developed in 2006, which basically says that in response to an attack by an unstate armed group like Hezbollah or whoever, or Hamas for that matter, the Israeli reaction is to absolutely blast to smithereens the main urban areas that the enemy depends on. And in Lebanon's case, this area is called Dahi, which is the Arabic name for this, the southern suburb of Beirut, which is predominantly Shia, where Hezbollah has some of its headquarters. This is a bit of a misrepresentation. It expands that area more than it should. Actually, it stops along this line here. It doesn't include this area, but whatever. And for the Israelis, the strategy is to just blow up everything in these urban areas. And by inflicting this mass civilian suffering, win the war if they can't win against the insurgents. And this is what was implemented in Gaza. And this is an evolution of the Israeli strategy that was pursued in the 1993 and in the 1996 wars in Lebanon. Which basically obliterated civilian areas right along the border. They found that this wasn't enough, so they went fully to the urban areas. And the Israelis wanted to do this again, essentially. And they wanted to start blowing up the southern suburb of Beirut in full. And Trump said, don't do it. And the Iranians said, if you do it, we are going to start launching attacks against Israel directly in support of Hezbollah. So this is the context in which all of this was happening. Basically, the Iranians imposed a red line on the Americans and on Israel and said that if Israel returns to the Dahi Doctrine and starts obliterating the urban areas where most Shia Lebanese live, then the Iranians will retaliate directly. Why did the Iranians draw this line? Well, because so long as there is a major urban area close to the port of Beirut here that allows Hezbollah to access weapons, move them to first the southern suburb, and then through the mountains into southern Lebanon, then Hezbollah can keep fighting. And Hezbollah can keep trying to regain these territories that were lost to the Israelis, even if this becomes a 5-10 year war of attrition, with the aim of basically repeating what happened in the year 2000, when after 18 years of fighting, Hezbollah eventually forced Israel out. Again, what you have to think about is that the partisans in this conflict are all thinking in generational terms. And they're thinking about the next 10 years and the next 15 years. They're not thinking about the next quarter. Whereas on the other hand, if the Israelis continue this policy where they're blowing up major Shia cities like Tir in the south, Nabatiyeh here also in the south, and they blow up the southern suburb, then essentially the Shia civilians of Lebanon have nowhere to go. And they are essentially ethnically cleansed and they leave the country and they're defeated. So Iran's intervention was intended to save Hezbollah, to allow it to live to fight another day. Whereas the Israeli objective, which is now shared with a portion of the Lebanese government, is to completely break Hezbollah with no regard to what happens to the Shia, and to, if necessary, plunge Lebanon into a civil war between the Lebanese army and Hezbollah. And this then becomes an excuse for the Israelis to intervene further in Lebanon, to strengthen themselves, to link up with the Christian communities. And as we said, I think in the last episode, from the Christian communities, they get access to the Alawite communities and they become the dominant power over the entire Eastern Mediterranean, which is a problem for Turkey, etc., etc. That's not the conversation right now. But what happened was that the Iranians set out a red line and the Israelis decided that they will test the red line with the explicit objective of either making sure that they can be given a full free hand in Lebanon to do whatever they wanted, or to draw the Americans back into the war and force another escalation with the Iranians and therefore gain a free hand in Lebanon and in the rest of the region. So what's competing here are two projects, both of them seeking regional hegemony. The Iranians are trying to get their own empire, and so are the Israelis, and indeed so are the Turks. If the Israelis can force the Iranians to separate from Lebanon, even if there's a deal with Iran, that is a little bit acceptable. But if they can't force a separation from Lebanon, that is the worst case scenario for the Iranians. For the Israelis. And on the other hand, if the Iranians give up Lebanon, it discredits them in the eyes of the Houthis in Yemen and of the militias in Iraq, and possibly in the eyes of their supporters in Bahrain and in Kuwait and in Saudi Arabia, and it becomes a major defeat for the Iranians. So Lebanon ended up becoming the center of this conflict because every side needs to be able to say that we held on to our gains in Lebanon in order to win. And because of the Israelis' experience fighting Hezbollah from the 1980s to 2000 and eventually having to withdraw, and Hezbollah being able to impose deterrence on Israel from the year 2000, 2006 to 2023, they don't want to go back to the status quo. So what's changed is that both sides have become much more hardline in their positions. And so the Americans, being largely unaware of any of this stuff, what they were trying to do was to just keep the ceasefire with Iran going in order to stay away from a resumption of the conflict. because it's become very, very clear that they don't want to get back into a war. But the Israelis do, and they don't even want a ceasefire with Lebanon. And that's why a couple of days ago, the Israelis conduct an airstrike in South Lebanon, killing a brigadier general in the Lebanese army. Now, the Lebanese army exists on paper. Its actual function is not to defend the borders of Lebanon. That's something that it's practically never done. Its actual function is to maintain internal peace between the different religious communities. It's a domestically oriented force, not a foreign oriented force. The one time it fought to secure Lebanon, it was in partnership with Hezbollah, and it was against the jihadis that were coming in from Syria. And it performed badly, and it would have failed were it not for Hezbollah backing it. The issue is, however, is that now, because the negotiations between Israel and Lebanon, the Lebanese army is being set up to take the task of dismantling the weapons of Hezbollah, which is what the Israelis want, and which is what officially the Lebanese state wants. But the Lebanese state is weak and incapacitated, and the current people who are running it were literally handpicked by the United States, the president and the prime minister. They've got no popular mandate, no popular base of their own. They were handpicked by the United States. And so they're risking an internal conflict with Hezbollah. And the Israelis know this. And it seems that the general that was targeted was somebody who was heavily involved in the coordination mechanism between Israel and Lebanon and the United States, which is the mechanism that keeps the ceasefire nominally functioning between Israel and Lebanon. And by killing this guy, the Israelis are sending a message to the Lebanese state and to Hezbollah that even though they're negotiating under American auspices to achieve a ceasefire, the Israelis don't really want it. The Israelis don't actually want a ceasefire. So not only did they attack the southern suburb of Beirut to test Iran's red line, they also bombed the representative of the Lebanese state, who was supposed to be their partner in dismantling Hezbollah. And the reason for that is that any ceasefire, for it to be signed by the Lebanese, is going to involve Israel having to withdraw from Lebanese territory. This is not what the Israelis want. They want to settle in South Lebanon and expand their territory, which, you know, is the traditional way of making war before World War II. You go and you seize territory and you kick out the people you don't like and you settle it and it becomes yours. Like, this is not that unusual. But everybody's pretending that, you know, we are living under international law when we're in the law of the jungle, as we always were. So the Israelis don't want a ceasefire. But the Iranians also have a reason to escalate. So Hezbollah has a reason to want the Iranians to escalate because it's getting hammered and it needs the Iranians to protect it and save it. The Israelis want to escalate because they want to dominate all of Lebanon, and that becomes a pathway to dominating the entire East Mediterranean coast. The Iranians also have an interest in escalation. I just want to be clear about that so that nobody tells me in the comments that I'm picking on Israel or what have you. And the reason the Iranians want an escalation is because currently under the ceasefire, Iranian oil exports are falling apart because of the American blockade on Iran, and because that blockade is also targeting ships that the Iranians use to export oil, and the Iranians need oil exports for their economy to function. They need to find a way around it. Previously, when it was just sanctions, what the Iranians could do was basically evade the sanctions, offer their oil at a pretty big discount, and you will find some enterprising shipper who's willing to break the law and sell Iranian oil. And the Chinese helped with that. The Malaysians helped. The Indonesians helped. The Omanis helped. The UAE helped. Everybody cooperated in this. But now with an actual physical blockade, the Iranians are facing a problem. And they need to break out of this blockade and improve their situation. And one way of doing so is to see is to basically take advantage of the fact that Donald Trump has been signaling for some time that he really doesn't want to return to the war, and capitalize on it and escalate. So the three major sides here have an interest in escalation. The people who don't want the escalation are the Gulf states, because they will bear the brunt of Iranian missiles and attacks, and the Americans, who somehow think that they can go and bomb Iran and then go back to peace. Which is not how any of these things work. When you go and attack someone, as Machiavelli said, you don't leave an injured enemy, because the injured enemy is a lot more vindictive. And so they've injured the Iranians, cornered them, didn't finish them off, because they can't finish them off. And now here we are. The Iranians feel emboldened enough to want to escalate again. And so that's how the ceasefire broke down. These are the incentives for the ceasefire to break down. The Israelis went ahead and attacked Beirut in a violation of the ceasefire that they'd agreed, in violation of the Iranian red lines. They attacked the Lebanese army. Hezbollah said that they don't recognize that ceasefire, because the way that it was meant to work, as approved by the Lebanese government, was that it would be Hezbollah ceasing fire, but not the Israelis. So, like, ceasefire means different things to different people. But the way this was meant to work was essentially to say that the Israelis can act against any threat. What's a threat? As far as the Israelis are concerned, everybody's a threat. Anybody is a threat. So, anyway, ceasefire wasn't going to work. Different sides escalated. And Iran fired four salvos of missile into Israel. The Israelis responded with airstrikes over air defense systems, but also over petrochemicals facilities in Iran, which is a big deal, because when you attack industry, you encourage retaliation from the Iranians against the energy infrastructure in the Gulf. And so the Israelis attacked the Iranian energy sector, not because it was necessary militarily, but because what they wanted was for Iran to attack the Gulf, and for that to force the Americans back into the war. This is the calculation behind it. It seems to not have worked yet, but if they keep trying, eventually it will. That I'm sure of. And in response, the Houthis in Yemen decided that they were going to join the fray. Now, I've been waiting for the Houthi to do something for some time. In the previous round, they were very much the dog that didn't bark. Now they finally decided to enter into the conflict. And they issued a statement saying that they're going to stop all Israeli shipping in the Red Sea, and that they are going to meet any escalation with escalation. Now, this has a couple of purposes, and they also fired missiles into Israel proper. Now, this has a couple of purposes. Firing the missiles into Israel, this is intended to support Hezbollah, and this is intended to force the Israelis to distribute their air defense and their capabilities to make it easier for the Iranians. The second objective, if the Americans escalate and try to stop the Houthi from blocking the Red Sea, is to put pressure on the U.S. Navy so that it wouldn't be in a position to enforce the blockade against Iran as rigorously. And if they can't enforce the blockade against Iran as rigorously, that means that the Iranians solve at least part of their problem with falling oil exports. So the thinking behind this is sort of two-phased, you know. One, support Hezbollah. Two, support Iran. And then there is a third objective, which is this. The Iranians' bid to make shippers pay in order to pass through the Strait of Hormuz seems to be working. And we are hearing from some shippers saying, yeah, we're willing to pay Iran. I'll bet that pretty much all of the Asian clients are willing to pay $1 million, $2 million dollars per ship in order to keep on trading and keep on doing business. And so for the Houthi, this is a good time for them to get into that business. they too have aspirations to charge fees for anybody using Bab al-Mandab, the strait at the tip of the Red Sea. This is obviously a disaster for the Egyptians. It means that there might be less shipping, or it means that the Egyptians have to cut the amount of fees that they charge for the use of the Suez Canal. But for the Houthi, this is absolutely fine. So we saw the Houthi entering this, which is bad news for the United States, because if you remember, in 2024, 2025, the Americans did their best to stop the Houthi from closing Bab al-Mandab and the Red Sea. They absolutely failed. After 45 days of bombing, this part of Yemen here, this little corner of Yemen, the Americans had to make a deal with the Houthi. And as part of that deal, the Houthi were allowed, essentially, to continue to attack shipping related to Israel.
What's up, fools? Main Event Jey Uso here from the WWE. When it's just me between matches, it's day one-ish. And that means it's Chumba time. With hundreds of casino-style games and new titles arriving weekly, there's always something fresh to try at Chumba Casino. The daily boosts make it even more fun. And have me about to get them all during my downtime. Ready for a fun way to chill out and enjoy a few minutes for yourself? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.